I'm Marcus Lemonis, and you're listening to The Prophet, the podcast from CNBC. You know, I've been traveling this country and investing in small business for more than 4 years now. And I've met hundreds of entrepreneurs, their employees, their families. And what I'm reminded of time and time again is that everyone has a story. They're complex, they have their own passion, their own motivation, and their own reasons for doing what they do. It's something I always try to appreciate. But all that being said, I've met some real jerks. A lot of them. And so my first rule when it comes to success in business, don't be an ass. That's really the number one takeaway, how to treat people. And I've met some people that just don't know how to treat people. Like that meal service guy in Florida, Eric at Fuel Foods.
And I'm not going back on your deal?
I'm not going. When we discovered that he was connected to somebody that was in a Ponzi scheme and that he was not really acting above board.
You're going back on your handshake deal.
It was the one time out of the 60 plus episodes where I actually thought somebody was going to hit me.
Why would I shake your hand?
Eric, good luck to you.
Your handshake means nothing. You're a handshake
listen,
deal.
You're an intimidating guy.
Tell me your handshake.
You're not going to intimidate me.
The guy was a big dude, and there was just two cameramen and me. I literally thought I was going to go through the wall.
I'm going to walk out on you.
Goodbye, Eric.
And then there's Andrew Rosenthal. Andrew owns LA Dog Works, this pet care place in LA that has everything from boarding, grooming, training, and a bunch of other things. I love the business model, and I love anything to do with pets. But Andrew, he was a complete maniac, and he hated everyone.
The only reason my partner is alive is because murder is illegal.
He's going to get fired anyway.
Why is that?
Because I can't stand him.
In the first day of filming, people typically are on their best behavior. But the really crazy ones, I think they have zero awareness. I remember Andrew Rosenthal being very aggressive within 5 minutes of being there. He was aggressive with me.
I can make this business work with or without you.
And his employees.
No. I'm not going to put up with that. Jesse failed miserably. He wouldn't listen to a thing I said. I don't have to ask him time and time and time and time again. Email me the schedule. Just do it.
That's a waste of
anger and yelling and screaming don't make anybody want to come to work early and stay late. And the goal is to get people to want to be attached to the business, not to run as fast as you can away from it. That brings us to the second rule. Make your employees number one. I've been publicly criticized about this philosophy. You know, you read all these books that say the customer's always right and make customers number one. And at the end of the day, for me, the customer isn't number one. The employee's number one. My theory is that if you treat the employee right, that ultimately that employee is going to be the one to interact with the customer and their experience will be better. I think the second thing is employees like to know you have their back. That guy Eric you just saw, the one I thought was going to crush me, put me through the wall, he was even worse to his employees.
What are you doing? Come on.
And he bulldozed anyone who tried to question him.
I don't really feel today that you guys feel like you're in a safe and secure environment to give your opinion without recourse.
Yeah, because it's always everybody else's fault. The way he says things, it does bother a lot of people that work here.
Sorry if you feel like you can't approach me. I'm sorry if you feel I've dominated you at a time. I'm sorry if I've ever made you feel bad. I'm sorry.
Just take it down a notch.
But instead of changing his ways, guess what he did? He cut the pay of some of his top employees and even blocked them from the company computer system. And I think it was punishment for speaking out against him at that meeting.
It smells like retaliation to me. You cut Alex.
Right.
You cut Diana.
Not at all.
I think it is
not
retaliation. I worked endless hours for you. You took us off the system. You already blocked us from all the
I don't know what intentions you're doing.
You locked her out of the computer already?
I changed my passwords.
You took Alex.
Not surprisingly, the employees that work there, well, they left. They got fed up. They don't want to deal with his crap anymore. That's why I always tell people, encourage your employees, incentivize them, make them more attached to the business, not less. I remember Tammy from Key West Key Lime. She single-handedly kept that business afloat, managing their finances, inventory, the staffing, all for $300 a week. And she had two kids at home and another one on the way. It was crazy. And the owner, he just took her for granted.
How do you get it all done?
I don't.
Have you talked to Jim about this?
Yes, but he believes that everybody should work really hard, and so it's disheartening. It's hard.
We almost lost Tammy to another company, but we saw her value and we wanted to make sure that she stuck around. So we gave her a raise and paid maternity leave. I'm gonna give you 6 months worth of pay, and I'm gonna pay you $1,000 a week so you don't have to bartend, if that's okay. Okay, I'm gonna give you a check and it should help you just kind of just be able to rest, take care of your baby. And then when you come back, you're gonna bust somebody's ass. All right? Okay.
Wow. Thank you.
Every time I see that, it reminds me how important people are in business. And it isn't just about the numbers. It's really about making sure that the people that work there feel like they're taken care of. But what's also important to remember is that you have to hire the right employees to begin with. And you have to know how to tap into their strengths. Which brings us to rule number 3. Know what you don't know. It's very simple. I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not good at. And what I'm not good at, I go find people that are really good at it and I make them part of the team. Not all of us possess skills to do everything. And when we can't recognize it, you're gonna end up with a big pile of poo. You take something like SJC Drums. They make a drum, beautifully handcrafted, great staff, but the place was in total chaos.
So you're inefficient and you're priced below market, which means you have high costs and no margin.
Death spiral.
The owner, Mike, is second to none when it comes to marketing and hustling. But he doesn't know how to make drums, and he's not the greatest with numbers either. And when I met him, he had essentially frozen out the two people who could help him most in those areas. There was his best friend, Chris, a guy as sharp as they come, but Mike was ignoring his advice.
Our gross margins last year were about 20%.
What should the margins be, Chris?
In my mind, they need to be like 40%.
In the pricing model that you put together, if Mike would have stayed away from it, would it have been 40%?
Yes.
Even worse, there was his brother Scott, the real drum expert in the family. Mike had essentially forced him out of the business shortly before I arrived.
Well, you were the artist. Let's just call it like it is.
Yeah, I mean, Mike designed drums and stuff, but when it came to, you know, putting your hands on it and doing it, that was all me. I, in my career, have made thousands, like, I think 5,000 drums.
So what's the story? Why'd you leave? What happened?
Well, my brother formed a mutiny, is what I say.
So there they were. Two people who could have helped Mike run that business thousands of times better than he could have, if he only listened to them. So I made sure he did. I made Chris a full partner. And then, as painful as it was, we got Mike and Scott talking again.
People had the wrong idea about me because of you. And that's, like, that's terrible.
I apologize for that, Scott. Things get blown up, things blew up. I never intentionally...
You did intentionally turn...
I apologize for that.
Okay. Well, you just said you didn't, but you did. Say you did.
I did it. And I'm sorry for that. I just want some sort of relationship and it not to be awkward.
I never wanted it to be this way either.
And then watching Scott work his magic, it was something special.
I have ideas about that. I think you go one flat finish, but it's a natural satin stain because then you're eliminating the cost of the laminate. You're eliminating an extra step when you're doing the bearing edges. I think natural is the way to go. What's the size of the bass drum going to be?
It's a 20-inch bass drum.
20-inch?
Yeah.
If you offer a 20 and a 22, you have almost the same shipping cost because you're still getting one box, but they were able to get another shell in there.
It's kind of cool to listen to your brother because he's got some crazy... He's very smart.
Watching and listening to Scott is like watching a savant make drums. The guy's so smart, and what he's able to do is really provide Mike with insight that he couldn't necessarily have on his own. By the way, here's a newsflash. SJC is a multi-million dollar company today. It's going to make $400,000 or $500,000 in profit this year. We just received a giant additional investment from a vendor. That isn't because they made a better drum. It's because I think Mike was able to take a step back and recognize that other people were better at certain things than he was. As I look back at the last 4 years of the profit, there's some issues that have come up time and time again. And one of those is family drama, always getting in the way of business.
You're coming off like you're saying you to your daughter.
Go to hell.
Do you and your dad have blow-ups here?
All the time.
Back up. You're crossing the line between father and boss.
How about you marry some crazy that we don't like, and that something happens to you and they'll have to deal with her?
It's not that I go out and I look for family businesses that have conflict. Families generally have conflict. Businesses generally have conflict. That tension and that energy is something that I've often tried to remove myself from. At least in the early years I did, because I was like, I'm not Oprah. But at the end of the day, I kind of am Oprah. I do have to be involved.
It sounds like you're more hurt that your brother was kicked out.
I mean, I feel like I literally got an MBA in therapy.
And I'll tell you, the main lesson I've learned is if you're going to work with family or close friends, you've got to accept the crazy.
Dysfunction in family and dysfunction in business can actually be managed by just recognizing what it is and working around it. It's understanding strengths and weaknesses and hot buttons. Now, there are those who end up understanding that, and there are those who don't. A perfect example of the latter, Worldwide Trailers, a concession truck builder out of Waycross, Georgia, and probably the craziest, most dysfunctional organization I've ever been involved with. Owners Tom and Nancy ended their 20-year romantic relationship, but they continued to work together. What ensued was complete chaos, screaming, yelling, and way too much information.
You, just so we all know,
you put us in the situation.
Tom's girlfriend has been working in this company for 3 years.
Oh my God, I remember this. It was so hot in that trailer, and they were screaming at each other like crazy people.
I have so really? Much proof right here really? That she's been working in this company. It is unreal. This is her cell phone, Tammy's cell phone, which is your girlfriend's. So it is his girlfriend, Tammy. This is the number. This is her direct line.
Tom,
period.
Is that, does she work there?
Sure does, yeah.
Your girlfriend works for a dealer that sells your product.
That's correct.
She's not allowed to be working anything to do with this company.
A dealer who produced half our volume last year.
I don't
year.
Give a
You know
situation.
What, Nancy? You put us in the situation.
Tom,
take your drama and take
no,
it elsewhere.
No,
you want to start airing the dirt,
no,
Nancy?
No, no, no.
Maybe you shouldn't have been in at a wedding and some guy in a bathroom. I can't work with you.
You know what? The deal's off. The deal's off.
I can't do business with you guys. I can't do business.
Well, when you
with
want to do
guys.
Business, give me a call.
That's all right. I mean, as far as that goes,
just
there's,
leave your
other, there's
Marcus.
Other people. I have a backup plan, so. I still love you, though, Marcus. Can we go out on a date now?
You.
Did you go on a date with Nancy?
Yes, I did go on a date with Nancy. No, I did not. Of course, I didn't go on a date with Nancy. And she asked me like 3 times.
Yeah. Give a.
In the case of Tom and Nancy, the crazy was so elevated that their ability to even be in a room together was impossible. But there are other situations where people actually can work through their family drama. A good example of that would be Courage B, a women's fashion brand in New York City. Now, the owner, Nicholas Garreau, had taken the business over from his mother when the business fell on hard times. But my issue with Nicholas is that he didn't respect his mother. He was abusive. He was outspoken. He didn't really appreciate what she had built. And I knew I had to get to the root of the problem.
You have your job to do. Your job is to come up with an idea, and then it is your job to advise. So when the product comes in, we will tell you whether it is financially and logistically feasible to do.
I cannot take it anymore.
I need to kind of understand what I just walked into.
I don't know what to do when he's that like that.
So this is my fault. Yeah. I'm not a good son. I don't take care of you.
No.
I haven't taken bullet after bullet for you. No. And we started this business with debt that we've just gotten ourselves out of, okay? That your children have been carrying. You want all of the accolade without
Nicholas.
Doing any of the work.
But after spending a lot more time with Nicholas, I came to realize that he was dealing with a lot of baggage, a lot of things from the past. About his father's passing, about his mother's role, about his sister, about the burden he felt. And he really hadn't had anybody to talk to.
When you walk in that door,
I am her boss.
You are her boss. But you also would never talk to an employee that way. So why do you?
I think my sadness is manifesting itself in anger. It's just sadness I've been carrying my whole life.
Look, family business inherently brings drama and history. But in this case, I wanted to get some long, festering issues out on the table.
This is another piece of that puzzle.
What is?
Our relationship. I mean, she is everything. Mom, dad, friend, partner.
Employee.
Discipline her to be creative, but be constructive. And be encouraging. And be supportive. She's your mom first.
Yeah.
And she's your employee last. Don't ever forget that. She's your mom first, and she will smack you upside your head.
Maybe she should more often.
Yeah.
Look, these relationships, they're never going to be perfect. And once you dig into the root of the issues and you really peel back the onion to find out how to communicate effectively, then you make progress. That's how I felt after Nicholas and I talked. I've seen him really mature. Today, great family man.
I think the thing, guys, that maybe is the best is that the relationship of all of you has transformed.
Yeah.
It's true.
And by the way, Nicholas's sister, Stephanie, could be maybe one of the best examples I've seen of personal growth. Even if I look at every episode I've ever done on the show, she went from taking the back seat in her family's business to running my $45 million fashion company. And that includes not just the original business, but every fashion-oriented business you've seen on the show. You know, it's been 4 years and 67 episodes since I started The Profit. And I've had people tell me on the street that I like to do business with softies. People that are like nice and they cry all the time. And I guess my response is I appreciate doing business with people who can be real and show me all of their scars and all of their frailties because it gives me the sense that they're never hiding anything. So that's rule 5. Be vulnerable.
I built it for my brother, for my family. I feel I failed them. I really do.
It's hard to be on the verge of feeling like you might not believe in it.
We did whatever we had to survive and never let any of them up there know what it took or a customer. In 7 years, people got bonuses. We had to bait.
I just feel like I failed. You are not a failure.
Well, I want to stop feeling that way.
Well, that's why I'm here.
For lots of folks, obviously, vulnerability doesn't come easy. It takes a lot of courage to really open up and own your story. Take the guys from Flex Watches. Their original line consisted of a variety of watches in different colors, each representing a different cause, like cancer or hunger, and a portion of their sales would go to that charity. But oddly, they drifted away from it.
Where's the charity angle on this generation?
A lot of people don't realize we still do the charity aspect.
I think this is a total miss. It doesn't feel on point with the brand. If you guys have a mission, you should stick to your mission.
I soon learned that one of the guys, Trevor, was the reason that they had gotten away from their original mission. And that's because in his mind, the charity aspect connected to the watches is a direct connection to his mom. And that brought back a lot of very painful memories.
She got breast cancer 8 years ago. Mm. We lost her 3 years ago.
She passed away.
Yeah.
What was your mom's name?
Karen.
Is your mom's name incorporated in
No, stuff? We've actually talked about that, but
we're just not able to go there yet.
Trevor went through a tough time, obviously, after his mom passed.
Because of me, probably, we just haven't talked about it and discussed it as much as we should, and I don't know how to tell that story. It's tough. I feel bad.
I feel bad for my best friend. That's it. I mean, no one deserves to, like, go through all that stuff. Just, it hurts, you know?
I pushed him to embrace his story because I knew it would bring him closure, but most importantly, help the business as well. But he pushed back and pushed back.
I don't know if the face of the brand is supposed to be so much about me and my mom. As much as that's our story, like, I just struggle with talking about it.
Until eventually, he got there. He personally prepared a video for Flex's website, which paid tribute to his mom and the impact she had had on the business. And it was incredibly powerful.
Love my kids.
We feel so good. It's crazy. We feel so inspired again to share with people about these causes that we care about.
The reality of it is that the reason your business was good is because people liked the story. And you had to fall in love with the story again yourself.
Nate turned out to be one of the best businesses I've invested in. Not just because we've sold some watches, but because the willingness to show their true colors, to be themselves. And I really made a point to break them down to get the best of them. Of course, if you're gonna tell your story, you better make sure it's a work of nonfiction. That brings us to rule 6, be authentic. I think people can get confused between telling your story and having it be authentic and telling a story and trying to convince people that it's authentic.
Take Max from Murchison Hume, a seller of high-end cleaning products. Toilet bowl cleaner, surface cleaner, you get the idea. And you'd have thought she was selling fine art. Walk me through this.
So we used to have a text-heavy label. I wanted to make it easy for the customer to identify. So
all
for
right.
me, it's icon.
So I'm going to challenge you on that.
Oh, no.
I feel like it's like buying products for my castle or something.
The chair is kind of like a chair that would be in a castle.
Anybody have a chair like that in your house?
No. I do.
And she didn't just have her head in the clouds when it came to her product. The company was on the verge of collapsing, and yet she was carrying on like everything was fine and it was perfect.
Max, it feels like you guys are slightly delusional about what's happening. It's like it doesn't feel like a company in crisis to me. She fought me on the name of the company, the look, any change she saw as a threat to the upscale image she was trying to cultivate. But when we discovered that her inventory was worth just a fraction of what she thought it was, well, that didn't even seem to faze her. So how much is actually here?
It's about 33 pallets, so not the 120 that we thought.
So
you're telling me you don't have $280,000
of inventory? How much is actually in inventory?
Like 70.
But I made a deal based on this information.
Sorry?
I ended up walking away. Because I finally realized that it wasn't about the company or the brand, it was about Max. It was more important for her to create this image of wealth and success and this aristocratic lifestyle. It was friggin' toilet bowl cleaner. I mean, trying to create a story is important, but having that story be authentic and having it be believable and having people want to embrace it like Schuller's.
The fat ain't dripping on the coal, it's not barbecue.
That's a story of a family that just lives on a big tract of land, that loves barbecue, that's just who they are. They wouldn't change for anyone, not even me. Case in point, when I tried to change Lynn's biscuit recipe so it would be better suitable for mass production, oh no, not gonna happen.
This is crazy. You know, it is a family recipe. I'm trying to adjust, but this is not us.
That's a story, but it's authentic. And you know what? People line up down the street to go there.
Now, it's this massive complex, like on 10 acres. They've undergone a huge expansion. Outdoor deck, general store, catering.
And what I love more about them than anything else,
they're authentic.
Yes, sir. There's nothing better.
Schuller's and Murchison Hume could be the greatest juxtaposition of authenticity.
Marcus, some teeth.
So vulnerability is one kind of honesty. Authenticity is another. But there's a third kind of honesty that's just as important. Rule number 7. Be transparent. See, vulnerability and transparency are two different things. Transparency is, I'm going to find out what you're hiding. And the more I sniff something that you're hiding, I'm going to find it.
I have tried to be honest, and I have tried to be
forthright. You haven't been honest at all. I do not want to do business with you because I don't think I can trust you. I feel like you're hustling me.
One of my biggest issues with transparency came with Sal. Remember him from Artistic Stitch? This was a small silk screening and printing business with a huge identity problem.
It's a multiplex of businesses that really work together. You get somebody coming in that wants to do shirts. He looks right onto that thing. Now on a Friday and Saturday night, he's coming in with his family and his kids and he's gonna actually eat in the restaurant.
That's what's called the mall.
While Sal lacked focus and had too many things going on under his umbrella, what I saw was a lot of promise in his core printing business. And I thought it could be a huge deal for me. But as soon as we started diving into the finances, red flags were everywhere.
Do you have any personal living expenses on these cards?
I'm sure there is. What's the big deal about that, honestly? I'm not 100% sure. The cards are not even active.
But you were 100% sure to tell me that it was construction debt. You put this paper together.
Yeah, maybe we needed computers and stuff. It could be. I'm not saying no.
Wasabi Japanese Steakhouse, $230.
I went out with my family.
On the company credit card?
On the company credit card.
Now I'm paying for your meals? This isn't sitting well with me.
Okay.
And I feel like you're lying to me about something.
I'm not.
But I feel like that because little by little, the story keeps changing.
Despite these hiccups, I went against my better judgment and upheld my deal with Artistic Stitch until I went back months later. I felt like I needed to pay them a visit in person because Sal started dodging my calls, not returning my emails, and what I returned to was a total disaster. Sal was lying to me and his landlord, Michael, and the whole thing was about to implode.
We look familiar to you?
Yes. I have been talking to you at length, and I'm just trying to get paid.
I've tried to help you, Michael's tried to help you, and you just struggle with being straight with people.
I never, ever did anything at all to go ahead and try to break this deal whatsoever.
Did you take money out of the business that you weren't supposed to?
To pay some of my expenses that I had.
Personal expenses. Yeah. You never got my permission to do it.
I understand that.
Money was going into the business, and he still wasn't paid. That was our biggest sticking point, that our landlord get paid.
You're caught with your pants down.
Leave him alone. He gave him, and he can't even defend himself.
There is no defense. Don't defend guilty people.
Gina,
here is my money. I haven't been paid for 3 years. Hayden, I'm no good. I've let him slide for 3 freaking years.
Okay. Gina, please don't go out there.
I'm closing you down first because I gotta get paid. That's the facts. All right?
Look, needless to say, I ended my deal with Sal.
I wish you luck, Sal.
Thank you.
I think Sal lied because he didn't know how to do anything else. He was used to manipulating the facts and manipulating people. But ultimately, the biggest mistake was the one I made. In my gut, I knew I shouldn't have done the deal. I lost about $300,000.
You know, in all my years of making the profit, I've invested countless hours and tens of millions of dollars. So my offer is $400,000, $600,000, $1.7 million. Do we have a deal?
We have a deal. Thank you.
We have a deal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Limonis. It is a pleasure to have
Marcus.
You.
But in order for these businesses to be successful or not in the long term, real business has to happen, like, after the cameras go away.
That brings us to rule 8. It's all about follow through.
I think people have this misconception that I'm going to come in and run their business for them. I'm not there to run your business. I'm there to push you along and point out things to you so that you could do it when I'm gone. And there has to be consistency and the following of that process, not the day after or the month after, but years after.
Seems pretty straightforward to me. And yet I have to grapple with this lack of consistency and follow through again and again and again. I can't be here every day.
I know.
And these people want a leader. And I don't know if you have what it takes.
The business has a ton of potential.
I think the worry I have, and I didn't tell this to anybody else, is that I don't think you want to do it.
I want to see them get their systems in order.
But are you going to help do that?
A good example of terrible follow-through is Standard Burger,
a Staten Island restaurant I invested in a couple years back. It's frustrating because while it's still a viable operation today, it could have been so much more. When I first arrived, I found a group of friends who couldn't have been closer or more volatile.
Are you kidding me?
Listen.
I was not one day late. I live 3 blocks away. What about all the times, hey, nobody's at the burger place, open up.
I'm not saying anything.
Right. So what the f*** are you talking about?
Their fighting had led to a real embarrassment of a restaurant, from frozen patties they used to the filthy kitchen. So I overhauled their menu, completely renovated the space, put one of the guys in charge as the managing partner, and most importantly, told them they all needed to follow my process and stay engaged if this was going to work. And then I came back a few months later. The guys had made a bunch of misguided changes to the menu that I'd never approved of.
It looks like chaos to me.
And they were wasting time scouting potential new locations instead of focusing on the plan, which was to build the national franchise concept in one place.
We're in the business of building a box
marketing it, polishing it, perfecting it, and then having somebody say, I'll take one, I'll take one. And that's what a franchise is. We are not in the business of leasing space and building out. And worst of all, they hadn't followed through on their promise to stop fighting.
I'm the guy that's here every day.
What's your problem?
And you're the guy that shows up once a month. That's what it is. That's the problem. So if you want to start calling my name and bullshit together, be ready to be a man and stand next to me and say so.
I'm saying there's problems here.
Yeah, there's problems here. You're the problem.
I'm the problem?
Yeah, that's right. Because you stick knives in your friends' backs.
I stick knives in my friends' backs.
And you say bullshit to other people and expect it to go under the rug.
So if I
that's what you expect.
Hold on.
I'm the rug. Sweep it under me. Yeah, I'm the rug. I'm the rug. Sweep it under me.
Standard Burger is still open today. It's profitable, but the Five Guys are not together anymore. A couple of them are just doing their own thing. One of them was fired. In hindsight, I made a big mistake by investing there. In hindsight, it was a $750,000 error. Another big disappointment for me in terms of follow-through, Amazing Grapes, a wine retailer in California with an absentee owner. So what do you do full-time? This is, you don't come here every day?
No, I come in here probably 2-3 times a week.
2-3 times a week?
Yeah.
Or 2-3 times a month? And guess what? Amazing Grapes closed. It's gone. I put $1 million in that business. $1 million. And it closed because there was a couple people there that did not want to follow the process. But for every business like Amazing Grapes, there's one like Bentley's. A pet supply chain based in the Chicagoland area. Lovely people, but one hell of a messed up process. They had grown way too fast. Every store looked different from the next. The merchandising is different, the layout is different, the lighting is different, the whole thing is different. But Lisa and Gio really put their heads down, trusted the process. Both stepped up as leaders.
What we need to do now is just start boxing everything up.
And the result? Nothing short of amazing.
What you're going to see today is kind of the future look of what could be a regional or a national brand. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I'll let you go first.
I'm closing my eyes.
Close your eyes. Don't close your eyes. Close your eyes.
I'll look at the floor.
Oh my God.
And here's the thing. They didn't just execute for the cameras. They followed through long after the cameras left. And guess what? Today it's $100 million business in top line with going to be close to 100 stores where we've received offers for north of $100 million to buy the business. Like, they're literally going to get like a $40 million check. That's a big deal. You know why? It's because they trusted the process and they followed through. After almost 70 episodes of The Profit, Rule 9 is one that should go without saying, but it doesn't. People, know your numbers.
How much money does this business make a year?
I mean, as far as I'll be honest, I don't know the exact numbers.
What is the cost to make something like this?
You know, that's a good question.
I can't move forward if I don't know for sure what the numbers are going to be.
9 out of 10 people still cannot explain where their money's going. In season one, I visited a small popcorn business run by a woman named Sharla. Remember her? I was shocked to find out that her accounting system consisted of piles of money on the floor.
Do you guys just leave money out?
Yes.
This will be a cool place to rob.
It only got worse from there. There was over $300,000 missing from her accounts, and Sharla was absolutely clueless. Or was she hiding something?
The problem is there's $319,000 missing.
Then I guess it needs to be found.
Why don't you seem alarmed by the fact that money's missing?
I don't think this is all accurate. I'm just saying.
Oh, and when I tried to get to the bottom of it, she got pissed off.
I might not be able to read my balance sheet, but I make $2 million a year. So don't be telling me I'm stupid and don't know what I'm doing.
He didn't say you were stupid.
No, please, Mother. It's my money.
That you shook, we're
what?
Only doing
Excuse
what you...
Excuse me? What did you start to say?
You shook his hand.
So what? Still my money.
It got so bad that I had to bring in a forensic accountant. And even that didn't help.
The money should be there because there are no distributions, no draws.
Right? Well, there's no distributions because there's no money to distribute.
But you have profit.
What's happening is there's leakage somewhere. I don't know if somebody else is stealing or you're stealing.
I control all the cash, so if anybody's stealing, it would be me, and I don't steal.
Okay, so where's the cash?
Where is the cash?
Couldn't tell you.
Something that goes hand in hand with not knowing your numbers, not paying attention to your margins.
So you're making 37 cents on this bat. It's not great.
It's not terrible margin.
What kind of margin do you make on all this stuff?
These are $450, and I sell them for $550.
That's $2,000.
And then what does it cost you?
About a 30% margin on those.
That's it.
The reason that I always tell people that they should know their numbers is it's the health report on the business. In order for you to make decisions about where you're going or who you're going to hire or what expansion plans you're going to have, you have to understand the current status of your business. So please, know your numbers. There's no excuse not to. You know what else there's no excuse for? Excuses. That brings us to rule 10. Quit whining and start winning. I've seen a lot of small business owners who simply do not take responsibility for their actions. What I always tell small business owners is to get a mirror. Want to know who's to blame? It's always you. And if you want people to respect you, take responsibility for your mistakes and your actions. A perfect example of someone who could not stop complaining and blaming others and passing the buck? My good friend, Hank Marse.
Blah, 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 blah. Hank inherited his father's once successful flower business. But under his leadership, let's just say that things started to wilt and the place was in shambles. I agreed to invest 100 grand to make some much needed changes. But no matter what I did, Hank did nothing but complain.
Marcus took a lot of stuff out of the store and just kind of dumped it in the garage. I'm not sure that the store looks that much better. My confidence in Marcus right now is kind of wishy-washy.
Until just 1 week into our deal, he backed down. And he blamed me for all of his company woes.
I appreciate your effort, but whatever you tried didn't really work. Between you and me, I'm not going to take your deal.
Why's that?
Well, a handshake on it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you promised that didn't...
Like what?
That didn't go through. Well, you
like
said
what?
You were going to give $100,000.
I spent over $100,000.
Well, I don't know what you did spent. I mean, I didn't see anything.
How much do you think I've spent?
$150,000.
Hank, are you f***ing kidding me?
Yeah, no, I'm not
trying to
kidding
tell me
you
that I didn't put money in your business?
I don't know what you did, because you didn't show it to us.
Would you like to see it?
Well, it's too late now.
Why is it too late?
We had a deal, and you didn't do it. And you said business was going to go...
You're kidding me.
Because sales didn't go up.
In a matter of 2 days?
You said...
That's because you're never here.
You said a week.
That's because you don't know how to manage this place.
Well, that's your
opinion.
So
you're telling me you better call your mama and get my money back. Honestly, Hank can blame anybody he wants, including me. Hank wasn't qualified to run that business. He wasn't Jacob Marse, and no one was asking him to be. I was just asking him to stop whining. Just get to work. You know what? After 67 episodes, I've seen a lot of crazy things.
I figured since your inventory is upside down, I would hang upside down too.
Good, bad, ugly, really ugly.
I rarely lose my cool.
Well, and I don't
you
want
step
you to
way the f- out of bounds.
But there's been one common theme that I've seen throughout, regardless of the business owner, is that they had a belief in themselves and a passion to get into something and to try.
I always wanted to be a CEO. I thought it would be the best job in the world, and I still do.
Even as I sit here today, I go into every single business with the same fresh set of eyes, without any misgivings, because I feel like I have a duty to give that business owner who took a chance on themselves, who took a chance by calling me, who better have their numbers figured out, a fair crack at it.
I'm so grateful that like you picked our company, and I just am excited to like see where it goes from here.
Look, I understand that The Profit is a television show that features me investing in small businesses. I get it, okay? But this is, for me, was never a show about business. It was a show about people and taking a chance on people.
It's not always gonna be fun. But my job is to make sure that you guys have a bright future.
And it was a lot for, I learned a lot about myself. I learned that I can learn anything if I try hard enough.
Chris, we're good. I got on. I don't like the margins. So I've pretty much established that this whole thing sucks.
And you don't have to be an expert at everything. You could partner with somebody that is an expert. I know nothing about making candy, but I always wanted to own a candy store.
That was good. I didn't really get a good taste. I need another one.
And I could almost argue that Pete and Allison made my dream come true. I've cried with business owners.
I was 8 years old. That's what I remember.
And I've screamed to the top of my lungs.
Guys, shut up!
for a minute. Shut up.
What's come out of it for me, and I think for a lot of other people, is how to treat people, how not to treat people. But isn't that a life lesson in general? Take a chance on really good people. It will work out.
I never would have dreamed this. Never.
Thank you, Marcus.
Don't invest in really bad people. Bad idea. How is that any different than relationships, hiring? I mean, how is it any different? You've been listening to The Profit, the podcast from CNBC. I'm Marcus Lemonis. For more of The Profit, subscribe today wherever you listen.